Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We're here with a very special guest, Aaron Potter. Aaron is an investigator of a little over 7 to 8 years that has his own YouTube channel, and he does a lot of unique things on his investigations. Welcome to the show, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm right, man. How are you? Thank you so much for the invite, and I feel honored. I'm kind of nervous because I haven't done this. This is my first time being on a paranormal radio show on my own. I've done a couple of radio shows with Cobule in the past, but on my own, this is my first time, so I'm a little nervous.
Well, that's okay, and you'll find that here at Paranormal Truth and Reality, we're kind of a different format than most radio shows, so you'll get comfortable pretty quickly. Let's just start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about what got you into the paranormal.
Well, got me into the paranormal. I started off, like, this was years ago. I got intrigued watching documentaries on TV, shows such as, like, The Haunting. I started watching shows like Paranormal State and Ghost Hunters, and that kind of just intrigued me. Like, it wasn't one of those things where I wasn't, like, a believer or not a believer. It just more so interested me, of all things. I kind of just went out from there and joined a group. Actually, I want to touch base on an experience that I had when I was really little. This is an experience that I had that my aunt had told me about. Had she not, I wouldn't have known this. So I wish I could say that it stemmed from there, but I kind of want to share that right now, if that's fine.
Yeah, go ahead. It's what the show's about.
All right, man. So my first experience that I had is when I was a kid, about, like, two or three, I want to say. Over at my uncle's house. Keep in mind, my aunt's and uncle's house used to be a funeral home. So at this point in time, my uncle and I were on the staircase, and I happened to look up top of the stairs, and I seen this older gentleman. My uncle had looked up too, and I said, "Who is this man upstairs on the stairs?" And my uncle looked back, and he didn't see anything. I said, "No, Uncle, there's this man on top of the staircase." And he looked up, and there's nobody there. So that was my first real-time, like, seeing a full-body apparition. So I thought that was a really cool experience. I wish I had remembered that as a child, but I just went in the back of my mind. I just couldn't remember, and my aunt reminded me that that's something that had happened to me in the past. So I think what more, I think that more so intrigues me. So I ended up joining a group called Sex and Scene quite a few years ago. This was probably early 2000s, probably 2008, 2009 maybe. And then I was with them for a while. And then after that, I went out and ventured out on my own with a past investigator. And he and I teamed up and did a group together. We were, at that point in time, I was keen in Paranormal Society. We've done a few cases. I did a few cases with Sex and Scene. My very first case with them was a cemetery visit over at Gilson Cemetery in Nashua. I don't know if you or anyone else has ever done it before.
You know, I've been to a lot of locations. I can't really tell you whether I've been there or not, to be frankly honest with you. I'm sure a lot of the people that I've interviewed have, and a lot of the people that I work with.
But I've been to so many locations. So as of right now, I'm currently looking to add some new members to my group. And before that, when I was with another investigator years ago, when I was just keen in Paranormal Society, after that, because we did a couple of investigations together for a few, we had a house visit, and that's when I had my very first personal experience. I had a spirit use my energy for the first time. That was different. The only way I knew that was because I felt my body, like, I had this really tingly sensation, kind of like when you get when your foot falls asleep. And so I was curious, and I had the digit core in my hand at the time, and I asked a question: is this you using my energy? And then, so that night, we went back, and I looked at the digital quarter, and I got an answer back, and I got a yes out of that. Now, and I was blown away, and I don't know, it was quite shocking, too, because I wasn't really, you know how it is in the field, that when we do an EVP session, you know, we ask questions, we hope to get answers back, but we don't always get answers back. So, I don't know if I was really expecting it, but I was hoping to get an answer response, and I actually got that response back, and so that was really, what's the word I'm looking for here? Validating. It was really validating for me to know that that's what was going on, because I really didn't know what was going on. I just know my body felt fuzzy and just weird, and I had never felt that before, at least when I'm in my torso, and just on my arms, like, unless, but, so that was one of my other paranormal experiences. My other paranormal experience I had when he and I were over at Madame Cherie's over in Chesco, New Hampshire. My first time being there, actually, this is a day during the day, and I had gone up there. I don't know if you know anything about Madame Cherie's, or her quote unquote castle, but the foundation is still there. The house has been burned down for years. The fireplace is still there, and what was most interesting was there was a bog up. There was a bog up on top of the fireplace that I didn't know about ahead of time. And I asked the question, like, can you make yourself known to me? Is there anyone with me? And out of nowhere, I heard this clink on the ground. And there was this bog up that was on top of the fireplace. It flew 7 feet from where I was standing. And for the life of me, I could not debunk it. I tried brushing it off, brushing it off the fireplace in the same direction. It wouldn't go in the direction that it went in. It went straight, like, 7 feet from where I was standing. I could not make it go in the same direction. I tried every which way I possibly could. There's no wind. There's no animals around. So I don't know what else could have made the bog up, fly the way it did or land the way it did. So that really just shocked me, too. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, it's interesting that you actually talk about some of that. EVP is a good validation. I think a lot of people that aren't in the paranormal don't quite understand that a lot of times that's how we realize something is going on. And you mentioned something else as well. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I apologize. I've got a bit of a cold running around. That's very, very unique, and that is, you know, as you're growing and you're learning, a lot of times you consistently kind of seek for that validation, if that makes sense, because otherwise you don't know what you're doing.
That's true. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's hard to tell because, I mean, you're looking for the validation. You're not always going to get it because you're not. I mean, spirits only know themselves if they're able to. Or if they care to, if that's the way it works or on that side. But validation definitely is key. And if you can get that, then more helps you to understand and really know what you're doing and what you're looking for.
Yeah, it becomes a unique experience, especially if you don't have somebody behind you teaching you ahead of time a lot of these things. When you go out on your first two or three investigations, you're kind of – you're just kind of winging it, I guess you could say, because none of us have a manual.
That's true. Unless you're with someone that, like what you said, unless you're with someone that has already had experience, then you're kind of doing it on your own and learning on your own and doing it like, you know, just kind of just, again, just learning on your own, I guess. That was my whole thing, too. I felt uncomfortable going on it on my own in the very beginning and not knowing what I'm doing. So that's why I decided to join a group first for a while and trying to get my bearings and learn from people who have been doing it longer than I have and kind of get an understanding of how it works and what the equipment and how the equipment works and what the equipment, what each piece of equipment is. and whatnot. So that really helped me too. I've been in at least two groups. I own a group with somebody. This is my first time having a group on my own. I've worked with a couple of investigators in the past recently. So now I'm working on adding more new members to my group. I'm going to be working on it this spring. I'm pretty much looking forward to that. That's kind of like my how I'm kind of started out. I've been watching documentaries and shows from, like I said, Paranormal State, Ghost Hunters, and that sort of thing. That's kind of how I got started. And I think it's a very interesting field to be part of. It's a very interesting thing field to learn and have these new experiences. Because again, it wasn't one of the things where I was or wasn't a believer. I was just kind of more intrigued by everything. And each time I do this one investigation, I'm always looking forward to learning the history and why this paranormal activity is happening, why, and also not only that, but helping clients and businesses and trying to help them more understand. And me and new investigators, people that are new in the field or experienced in the field, and just learning as much as I can, helping other people learn, and just helping people in general. Because you know how it is in the field when we're working with clients or even with each other, like we're learning from each other, but helping help, but also more importantly helping other people also learn, understand why this kind of stuff is happening and what we can do for them to help them.
When you brought up a very valid point that a lot of investigators start out on, you have two types of listeners, just so that you know, you have two types of investigators that are out in the field. The first type are in the field for quite a long period in time, like myself, even though I do more tag-alongs than anything else to tell the stories. I had my time as a team too. And the older people, and we got into it a lot of times because of personal experiences as a child or a situation that was drastically a part of our life, and then it just became a part of our life. And then later on, a part of what made the ghosts and the paranormal acceptable was when Ghost Hunters and the documentaries and the shows started to come out. So you have people like Aaron that got into it because it fascinated them. Now, what they learn when they start to go out there is it's not quite like what you see on TV.
No, it's not. It really isn't. There's a lot less, really a lot more to it. That's one of the things that I kind of like discovered too, because there's more to just knowing the history and just talking to the clients or whatever. It's more going out there and learning and doing the history and doing the research. Myself, I'm not – research is hard for me. I worked with a couple of investigators like a few years ago. One investigators that I worked with was really into history and the research, and she did a really awesome job. She was a really good researcher. That was one of her fortes. And so just being in the field is – more importantly is – doing the research, doing the history, and knowing, why, or at least knowing how long, how long the building has been there, how old the building is, and what went on in the building, and so like I said, there's a lot more to it than just what we see on TV for sure. I definitely agree with you, man.
Well, research and history, again, that's a lot of what I did. I spent a lot of time when I wasn't learning from investigators doing the interviews and then doing the historic research and so forth. It's very, very important, and it's a long process somewhere along the line to do all of that and to do the research and the terminologies. If you're dealing with something that can get a little bit more scary, and I spent a lot of time in theology, then you've got the aspects of studying demons, studying angels, studying entities, studying other possibilities. And there are literally, listeners, millions of possibilities. A lot of them are mythological when you start getting into it, and they're not necessarily real, but some of them match, ironically, some of the situations that you're running into along the way. Then when you add the languages, the history of locations, the things that you can't find that you're digging up through the Census Bureau and going to the local libraries and the historical societies, it can be a task on its own, and it's a very interesting task when you do it. I had fun with it.
Yeah, it definitely is a fun thing to do. I think for me, again, research is hard for me too, just to look up stuff. I'm trying to do a little bit of that now, and when I have time, and but there's a whole lot more than just doing the research, and you have to know all the, you have to know about demons and entities and every bit of the paranormal, because you need to be able to debunk things in every case.
When you're dealing with mythology and demonology and so forth, and listeners, just a history on demonology, it's not what most people think. Demonology is actually a theological aspect that studies the term demon and everything related to the term demon, including any entities from history that literally can date back to the early Celtic days. So when you're dealing with a lot of that, the internet doesn't apply anymore. You have to start digging deeper. You might have to read books. You might have to make phone calls just to come up with that little piece that you didn't think about.
Right. True. Because there's something you should know, too. Being more into this, I've come across people that are more into that and knowing of that. And so it definitely is something that's very useful that you need to have in the field. So if I myself don't have that terminology, I'm gonna at least make sure I have somebody that I know that has that terminology, so that I can at least, if a case comes up and I can't help that person, I want to make sure I know somebody of that nature that knows that information, that I can at least, you know, have them help that person, because I want to be able to help anyone that would need help in any case. I remember a few years back, someone had called me up. I had a case on dealing with demons. I actually physically had to call a priest. I had to call them and have them. So that's really hard to do. It's really hard to get a priest right off the bat, have them come out and help a client out off, you know, right out the gate. So I was fortunate enough to reach somebody of that nature and have them come out and help a client, and they got helped, and it was. The priest reached out to me and gave me some information on what he did and everything, and it was great that I was able to do that, because I heard that it's really hard to get a priest out to help some people. It's hard to you need to have lines, you need to have some sort of connection somewhere.
It does take a while to formulate a lot of connections. Especially in the paranormal. There's a lot of different teams. Some of them are more technical than others, and they just deal with the science involved. Some of them are more metaphysical, so they deal with a lot of different avenues, from crystals and feeling and emotions and empathic abilities. And some of them are more of the theological, so they deal with demons and entities and so forth. And when you combine all of those together, it's really hard to define which ones have the knowledge and which ones don't sometimes.
That's true. Nope.
But it is a vast, vast field. I think when dealing with demonology alone and angelology, which is the study of the angels, the opposite of the study of the demons, I think it took me 11 years to find true people that work in the specific field of demons and angels. And then, of course, I'm a picky guy, so I had to check their credentials. I needed to make sure they were telling the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. But otherwise, if they're not legit, then you kind of waste your whole entire time. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah, it's a learning process. And that's a learning process that at your level now, you're in it, what, for 7 years, maybe 8 years?
Yeah, seven to 8 years or so, briefly. I'm trying to, like, calculate things, and so I joined a group, like, this is more than that, really early 2000. I'm kind of, like, going through my experiences, and I've been with a group, and I end up quit branching out from them. I was in their group for about a year and a half, and I joined. I did a thing with a past investigator of mine. We were Keen Paranormal Society for a little while, and then I branched off from that, and I kind of did my own thing. I freelanced for a little bit, that's for about a year or so. I didn't get anywhere without that. That was hard for me there. Then I joined another group here in New England. That lasted for about maybe 2 years, maybe. And then I branched out from that, and I kind of wasn't doing anything for a while. I missed being in the field and doing investigations, so I kind of they went and I, and I met some people, and I started working with a couple people recently, like a few years, two years ago or so. We kind of became Keen Paranormal Research Society, and we went on like 20 plus investigations together. I had a researcher that was really good, another investigator, her sister actually, that was really good at investigations. We did investigations there, and we all just really did a great job, and we worked really hard on, on the investigations and doing the research. And we had a client that we were helping out. We did our best with that. So we kind of came a long way, and I'm still kind of so right now I'm trying to just build my group and add members and stuff, and try and get some more vacations in and learn more and experience more. So
It takes at least 5 years just to get the hang of things. As silly as that seems, you can learn some of the basics. You start feeling your techniques and so forth. And I've actually had this conversation with a lot of rookie teams, because a part of what I'm doing with the documentary right now is we're putting rookie teams in motion, people that are just starting out in the paranormal, getting their feet wet. Then we're going to follow along with them as well as the professionals in the field, and we're going to tell their stories as a part of this documentary to kind of show people the real aspects of the paranormal. But I was telling them recently, you don't need me sticking my nose in, but be aware that it's going to take you probably a good 3 or 4 years just to get the feel for things, because you're going to play around with a lot of things. You're going to have a lot of questions. You're going to get stumped 1,000 times. You're going to have to ask other people. You're going to have to do tag-alongs. So it's a process. You get to about 8 years, you start knowing what you're doing.
I know, absolutely. That's how it was, man. Like, when I first joined the group, I didn't know anything. I didn't have any clue. You can't know anything just by watching these shows and documentaries. You gotta be in it. You gotta physically be in the field and really get your feet wet and really learn things. And so I definitely did learn things, and I'm still constantly learning things. Even if it takes another 20, 30 years, it doesn't matter to me. You're gonna learn more, and I'm gonna have to, like you said, dig deep more into things. And I'm also looking to work with other teams. My whole goal is to work with other investigators, other teams, and gain that experience too, because not every team works the same. We all work differently, and I keep hearing this word, paranormal unity, about working together and being part of a whole, and too many amateurs out there that aren't in it for serious reasons. We're in it for really specific, really serious specific reasons, and and people are, again, this paranormal unity thing, it's a very unique thing, because again, we're all in it for the same thing, and so we all should be working together and working towards that same goal, and just kind of keeping that in mind.
Well, everybody uses the term para-unity, and
I hear a lot. So I'm not really honest. I kind of understand it, but not. I kind of like. I don't know.
I had a really famous, not famous, but a really well-known personality, and I won't share his name because I didn't ask him, because these things just kind of come up. But he told me one time the biggest problem with para-unity. There are so many different aspects of the paranormal and so many different opinions involved that you're never going to have unity. Just like in life, we are going to disagree.
That's true.
Now, I think a lot of people should collect the data together. I think that, and currently, gentleman Joe Thompson and myself are working on a large database from all the investigators we've worked with and all the research that we've done in our own experiences as well as with others, so that paranormal investigators have a place to go store their data when they wish to, and look at other data to try to match. So that way, if you get stumped on an investigation, you're not just alone. And I think that's very important. The more data we collect together, the more information we can get. But there's a difference between collecting and sharing that information and having 100% unity. Let's face it, America doesn't have 100% unity in anything. We're never going to have it in the paranormal.
That's true. I definitely agree. I mean, I don't know really how that came about, but I mean, I agree with you absolutely. Like, we're not all going to agree on the same things. We're going to we all have our own belief system. So I think that's something else to keep in mind, because we may agree on some things, but we're not all going to agree on everything. So I don't really know how that term got tossed around or who made it up in the first place. So you definitely bring up a really good valid point. So I mean, again, it's
Well, that's the thing. You'll find, the more you grow and the more you talk to people, just like I did, is once you get past that term and you just start talking shop, a lot of the investigators have been doing it for 20, 30 years or so. They're more than glad to teach you their different techniques. And most of us are on the same page. You know, we've been around the block so many times that we understand certain specific things can be explained. Certain other specific things can't be explained. And there are methods to the madness. It's not in a rule book. It's not in the left and rights, but we all do some things the same. A little brief pause, everybody. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. We're on with a paranormal investigator, Aaron Potter. A little bit of local news. I will be joining Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown this weekend at Pottstown, Ohio. We're going to record some of that, and I'm going to have a little bit of that hopefully in the documentary. We're also going to post it up for everybody to see on my Facebook page and RTP, so that everybody sees a little bit about Gavin Kelly and Paula Purcell, as well as Joe Vitale. I'm going to have a couple of other people that are supposed to be there as well that are fairly well known in the paranormal community. So everybody stay tuned for that. And don't forget to watch Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. They're filming season 3 right now. Season 2 will be out really soon. Make sure you catch up on season 1. In local news today, we advanced on a new rookie team. So keep an eye out on Jay Pierce. He's got a new rookie team that he's working on right now. We just launched Team Rat on my page. Great bunch of people. They're developing their thing, so make sure you take a look at them. Let's just jump back straight into things, Aaron, here. We've talked about a little bit of everything. Let's talk about your techniques a little bit. I'm sure you started fairly early on, so you probably had to experiment with some equipment. You found some things you like, some things you don't like. So tell us a little bit about your methods.
I don't know, man. Well, I had to learn. I mean, definitely the equipment. I had to learn a lot from that, like how the K2 works, at least the EMF in general, the electromagnetic field, and also more importantly, the definitions of these things, like the EMF, EVPs, what that stands for, electric voice phenomena, electromagnetic field, all the different types of EMF devices. I have a Mel meter and a K2. I have this ghost meter that I got off Amazon. So definitely I use equipment on my cases. I have stuff that I keep track, like logs and stuff. One of my researchers that I was working with recently. They did a really awesome job with looking up stuff and printing stuff out. As far as techniques and stuff, using the equipment as much as I can and learning from that, and asking, you know, valid questions. And as far as the EVs go, to make sure that we ask questions, you know, we pause in between each time, and we try different things out, like maybe we may bring like an object, like physical objects for them to interact with. Maybe it'd be like a ball, or maybe a bottle cap, or you know, things of that nature. If that answers your question at all.
Listeners, as Aaron has mentioned, EVP is electronic voice phenomenon. Basically, yeah. It's ITC. What that relatively means is, generally speaking, when you're doing a digital recorder, regular recorder, I'm not much on the spirit boxes, to be honest with you, but some people get some great results there.
Yeah,
when you pick up a voice in the background that should not be there out of the low frequencies or static noise, then you have an electronic voice phenomenon, which is an unexplained electronic voice coming on when it shouldn't be there. And that's the study. Brief pauses are very important in the situation, as well as not using what most people see on television. One thing that really bothers me is when people go in and they say the same things that you've heard 1,000 times on TV. Are you there? Did you die here? Do you have something to tell me? You know, honestly, if I was a ghost and I listened to that over and over and over again, especially in a location people went to all the time, I wouldn't say anything.
No, because you get bored like real quick hearing the same questions over and over again. So your questions should be definitely very specific and not just the same old, same old. I think what I find it even more fascinating is, you know, getting a response on a digital recorder or anything of that nature, but also some people have had actual experience of actually hearing a voice not on a digital recorder. They might hear a voice at that time come through just out of nowhere, and it really just shocks them, and they're just like, whoa, I swear, I walked out of this room, and I just heard somebody say, bye, you know, I heard, out loud, and... Or like, because I've heard of that happening. People have had those type of experiences. I have yet to have that kind of experience. I've only caught EVPs on digital recorders. I've asked specific questions and gotten responses back. A couple of my investigators I worked with a couple or two years ago, we were up at Mount Cherise during the night, and we asked a question. And I don't remember what the question was specifically, but some of the lines of keep talking to us, you'll see, or keep talking, you'll see. We even got get out of here on the digital recorder. So that was that was really I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is. I guess surprising, because we weren't expecting that type of answer, but
exciting. That's what I like to use.
Yeah,
exciting.
That's a good word.
I was at the Myrtle's Mansion. Gosh, it was almost 8 years ago now. And while we were at Myrtle's, listeners, I won't go over the history of Myrtle's, but there's a very famous lady that poisoned the family that was there. And she was considered to do voodoo and so forth, and she dies in the area. I was out there and I was just talking, and I keep the recorder running all the time, even when I'm not doing questions. I was just talking to the people that were there, because my job was to help them film. I wasn't the one being filmed. I was there following along. My job was to help them film at the time and then do some recordings in the past. And I remember looking at the star of the show, and I said, you know, is this place really haunted? Is there anybody really there? And then I brought the recorder back and played it through, and you very distinctively heard Marie LeBeau.
Wow. That's awesome.
It was amazing. I loved it. It got into a little bit more detail, because I had some pretty crazy things happen in my house, and I didn't think that these things could follow you. I turned the recorder on, And I said, is there somebody here? We got Marie LeBeau is in the house.
So she followed you home. Wow.
So she actually followed us back for a short period in time. And though a lot of people say, yeah, well, that's just a story. Actually, we had it. Believe it or not, guys, that is actually on a television show. I handed the recorder back to them, even though they didn't keep me on it. They did play the recording. So you'll watch one of these shows somewhere along the line that I worked with, and you're actually going to hear the words Marie LeBeau at the location. And they state they got it there. They did get it. We didn't know it at the time, but it, you will hear it. It's fun and interesting when you get that. You just go, oh, my God.
It is really fun. It is exciting, and because again, with validation, you're looking for validation, and you're either going to get it or you're not. And if you get it, then it kind of more excites you, and more so, it makes you more, more interested, and more wanting to know more, and wanting to ask more questions, and hope to get more validation out of that. So that's awesome that you had that experience. You actually got that name after you asked that question, you actually got a legit validation out of that. That's pretty awesome.
You get a lot of unique things. I mean, those are the rare things, like you're mentioning in the voices. I know several of the people that I have actually talked to and had on the show have mentioned the fact that they've heard voices. I know myself I have. I was at the Ohio Reformatory, believe it or not, and there's a lot of echoes and things that are there.
Yeah.
But I was walking out of a jail room, and I remember stating, I don't think we're going to get anything here. And we didn't get it on the recording. But you could very distinctly – and everybody stops and goes, what? Because the moment we walked out of the cell, I said, I don't think we're going to get anything here. It's just a bunch of echoes. You could hear a laugh and then somebody say, oh, you will.
Wow. What? I'm like – that would totally make me, I think if anything that would make me jump and make my skin crawl, but at the same time, like did I just hear that? Like did it just really come through out of leaving the jail cell? Like no way, man.
Yeah, we were really hoping we got it on the recorders because everybody's like, did you hear that? And we're all freaking out at the time because it's like, was that you? Was that you? Was that somebody over there? We're looking around trying to find an answer, and then we played back all of that evidence for hours and did not get squat.
Wow, what? Dang, man. Oh, geez.
I absolutely love paranormal investigation.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead. This is your show. Tell us what you want to talk about.
No, that's right. No, the thing that really, fascinates me, though, is the fact that, you heard something coming out of jail cell, but you went back and listened to hours of recording and didn't get anything at all. Like, that totally just, it kind of, I don't know if it dumbfounds me. Well, not dumbfounds me, but, it kind of, made me think, maybe because at that point in time, that entity was talking straight in the digital core at the time, but it was just kind of, to you, to a point where only you could hear it, and your audio didn't pick up at all. So it just kind of intrigued me, to a point where I don't understand, how that doesn't happen, how you can hear it out of thin air, but you don't actually catch it on any audio or anything. It totally just it blows my mind sometimes. But I mean, I kind of do understand it, but at the same time, I'm it's just it kind of makes you wish you caught this awesome audio that you just heard, and you go through hours through audio and you didn't catch anything, and you're just what? How did I not catch that?
Well, and a lot of it narrows down to there's a lot of that. Brandon Kirchner was on several weeks ago, actually 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he mentioned something that's very, very important. A lot of the stuff that all of us get when you're out in the field, you can analyze that to the room and back and hopefully get something. But reality is the personal experiences are what makes you come back. Now, whether that experience that we heard was real, or maybe it was just mass hysteria. Maybe somebody said something and all of us thought it was something else. Who knows? The reality is that personal experience made me myself go back 4 times, and hopefully I'm going to be going back again to tag along with a few people in March. But those personal experiences are a major part of the paranormal, because a lot of this can't be proven. No matter how hard you work at it and try to find that proof, let's face it, we do this for years, and we're lucky if we ever come up with that holy grail.
True. I definitely understand that, man. It's awesome to be able to, like, ask a very specific question, and they're really maybe a popular – not popular, but, like, you want, like, a huge – like, you talk about the top of the holy grail, like – one of those really, like, I don't know, type of questions that kind of raises your I don't know what we're looking for here. One of those holy grail questions you really want, like, that really, like, answer from. And you get that, then you're just like, yes, I caught something that I really wanted to get, and actually got it. And you just, it kind of just, it yeah, it makes you, like, just, you know, I don't know. But it's awesome when you do, though.
That's why a lot of people – there's a term in the paranormal I absolutely hate, and that is science and the paranormal doesn't mix, which is actually not the truth. A lot of investigators that get beyond that 15-year marker, they start to realize there are things that we can do. There's a very young investigator that's on Team Rat that's catching on to that by listening to a lot of the people and taking advice from a lot of the people that I know throughout the years and have put him in contact with, that's doing something. And a lot of EVP technicians that realize that, you know, we can catch these voices and so forth, but we need to look deeper than that. Let's look at the low tone frequencies. Let's look at the high tone frequencies. Let's find out where this thing came from, because there's got to be some sort of method to the madness. There's got to be a reason this is happening. Let's start looking at the temperatures involved. Let's start gauging this in more in-depth territory. Let's put more sensors around to do this. There's a lot of scientific methods that are now applying to the paranormal the more you get the ability to do so. And that is a tough thing in the paranormal, so that listeners know, because when you're starting from scratch, and you got to buy all this crap yourself or develop it.
That's true. Yeah. As far as grouping goes and stuff, like, it's more like, you know, like what you said, it's how do I say it? It's like, cause the equipment that we get is expensive, so it's stuff that we're using, you know, it's good to have all the equipment, but also what's really awesome to do too, I did a ghost tour with one of my investigators over in USS Salem with this paranormal group, RTS Paranormal, and they're a very unique group because they not only use equipment, but they also use like old school with as far as using your own perception and maybe just listening with your own ears and. You know, and just kind of maybe just being still and just trying to get to know the elements, I guess I can say, or just, you know, not so much paying attention to the equipment and then kind of just using your own. That's what I'm looking for here. I'm drawing a blank. Sorry.
Your own senses and your own perceptions are very important in the paranormal.
Yes, they are. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, an old school isn't too bad. I know people – Ron Cross actually uses a lot of old school methods, and he's an amazing man when you talk to him about paranormal investigation. He's used dowsing rods. He prefers to use a compass because EMF meters, though they're useful, they're also very deceiving. Some of the models pick up on entirely too much stuff. But if you've got a compass in your hand – and the compass is showing that it can't go north and it's going crazy, then there's a magnetic frequency that's so vast it's affecting a compass there. That's something to talk about.
That's interesting. I had never heard of using a compass in the field. I mean, I've seen it somewhere. I don't remember maybe, but I don't know. But yeah, I find that fascinating. Maybe I should give that a try. Like you said, EMF jitters can be deceiving, right? Because it's hard to, you know, unless you're not near any, you know, physical electricity power boxes or whatnot and so forth, you know, unless you're near that, then it's it's hard to validate things. You know, if you're not
well, and even then, some of those meters will pick up on the power lines down the road. You have the standard Earth's electromagnetic fields, and if you're in specific areas of the planet, for instance, here in Ohio, we have a centralized magnetic field that's just natural throughout Centerburg and Delaware. So you can physically pick up EMF virtually anywhere in those areas, even if you walk out middle of a field.
That is hard.
Yeah, so it can be very deceiving. But again, a compass and a dowsing rod being two of the most old school items used in paranormal, and they date back for years. If you have a compass that's not registering, there's a reason that compass is not registering. If it's going all over the place, then that means you have some sort of strong magnetic field that's interfering with that compass. That's something to notate because it's not normal.
No, it's not.
Dowsing rods are just fun.
They are fun. I had a chance to use them. I worked with a group when I was just Keen Paranormal Society. We worked with another group here in New England, and they used dowsing rods, and we had a chance to use them, and they're very interesting. I mean, that's something to try. I mean, I don't know if I would. I'm curious about stuff like that too. Like, I don't know how it works, but it does. And like, you kind of have to have more education on why they work before you can actually understand them. And they explain to me and how they're supposed to use them. And just being able to be still and let Rod kind of like, you know, detect the field themselves, because if you're moving around, then you're not going to get anything, because obviously you're the one making the move. So if they're moving by themselves, then obviously there's something else going on that you don't really recognize.
Yeah, well, and there's definitely places for both old school and new school method. What a lot of people don't quite understand is the fact that some of these things are relatively easy to get a hold of. Motion-sensitive lights can pick up the fact if somebody's moving back and forth. If you set a camera up and you shoot it at a motion-sensitive light, and listeners, just so that you know, you can pick up a lot of those things relatively cheap these days. You can even pick up an infrared motion sensor light that will go off on its own and pick up a direct signal for right around $30 or $40 and tack it on a wall. So shoot a camera at a motion-sensitive light, and if nothing goes across there and that light still goes on, if you can't debunk that by tapping on that light or something to force that to go on, why did it go off? You know, little things like that are the keys. Paul Browning actually is working on a security measure right now that's easy for people to put up, that he's going to be putting up on his website and a few other things, that's motion sensors for security purposes, because you never know who's going to walk across a room and affect your evidence. You never know who's going to come into an area and affect that evidence and those echoes and possibly mess up an EVP and so forth. These are all things a lot of people don't think about but are key, because when you're out on in a field or in an investigation area, what happens if you don't know where your film crew is? What happens if you don't know that the janitor just walked in the door downstairs? All these things end up going, oh, my God, there's a ghost. And it turns out after umpteen hundred times, oh, crap, man, this wasn't anything.
I mean, generally, their key thing is debunking. You want to be able to go back and see if you can actually debunk the situation. And in some cases, you can't debunk an experience that happened or maybe you had, and that kind of is more exciting. It's exciting to know that you can't debunk that situation, that experience you actually did have, and that something, you know, maybe that a spirit that crossed your path and did something to you, or actually moved an object, or vice versa. But certainly debunking is key, because you need to be able to validate whether it was. Really, it was this, or maybe it was really maybe an entity, or whatever it was that maybe did this. It's exciting to know. It's exciting that if you're not able to debunk your situation, then it kind of just blows your mind, I think.
It does. When you finally get something that makes you question, other old school items, trigger objects are very, very important. People are starting to advance on that a little bit. Tyler, one of the people that was on my show, uses a spinner because, you know, if you sit it down and that thing starts spinning on its own, then why is it spinning on its own? Because those things are heavy enough to where you can't just blow on it. Wind's not going to get it to move. You know, balls, toys, things along those lines can all be really neat little cheap items to get you started.
Exactly. Yep. I definitely agree with you on that one. That's funny because I actually have a fidget spinner that I got last year. Maybe I should give that a try and bring that on a case and see if I can get that to move on its own, maybe by an entity or something. So that's interesting. I never heard anyone use a fidget spinner for an investigation, have it move on its own, like out of nowhere. Like that's funny to me. But that's cool. That's awesome that they were able to get that to. So you said that it moved on its own. It didn't get to.
Well, he's still testing the aspect. He uses it as a trigger item. He hasn't released whether – he did say he's got a video coming out where it did slightly move on its own, and he can't explain it. Of course, obviously, listeners, you'd have to watch that. It's Para Tyler on YouTube. But he said, you know, that's just something unique to him. He thought forever on – you know, let's do something different. Hey, nobody's ever done spinners before. That should be something interesting. And he's right. Because you can't move those on your own, you know, on their own. You have to spin them. So I think it would be a unique test. I'm probably going to do it out in the field somewhere along the line just to see.
Yeah, me too. I should try it myself. I said that's an awesome idea. I've heard of Paranormal Tyler. I've seen some of his videos, and he has a great team, and looks like he's been to quite a few, you know, or, you know, probably 80-plus investigations probably, and he's been to a lot of cool places.
Oh, he's an amazing guy. He's got a lot of investigations, unique style. He works with another guy that it's called Paranormal and Guns or something along those lines, but they're just wonderful investigators. They like to have fun. Of course, obviously, it's YouTube, so every now and then you're going to get that occasional cuss word, but but he's very professional with what he does. I think the guy's got a heck of a career ahead of him.
Nice.
So let's talk a little bit here. I know we're winding down to our last 4 to 5 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about where the listeners can find you here in the future. I know you've got a little YouTube channel yourself, a little bit about what you're planning here in the next year, so that if you've got any events you want to discuss, they can get a chance to find that as well.
All right, yeah. As far as my socials go, definitely find me on Facebook. My group is on Facebook, Keen from the Reader Society. I'm also on YouTube with my group. I also run, if anyone is interested, I run a page called Fans of the Paranormal. I apply to people on there. For anyone that's interested in the field, wants to share their experiences or share stuff on the page, you know, feel free to hit me up on that page. Even in Messenger if you want. We can definitely add you to the group if you're interested. It's more not really a specific group. It's more so just anyone. It's for anyone and everyone, really. So if you find that on YouTube as well, Twitter, Instagram. Let's see, what else? I think just Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our YouTube spots. I don't have any events right now. I am working on adding new members to my group. If you're in the New England area. If you're interested in joining my group, definitely hit me up on my page, message me. I'm going to be going through interviews and working with people, trying to get that going. Again, I don't know if I have any events going on right now, but I'm hoping to maybe plan some. I definitely want to venture out and work with other teams. I'm looking to get other investigations going on this year. I'm hoping to join up, maybe do some events with other teams, maybe do some events with my group. I'm not sure what that will be yet, but I'm going to be talking about that with my future group, and if that all works out.
Well, feel free to hit us up here too. I know that Paranormal Truth and Reality, and then our new project, Generation Truth, is going to be going all around the United States here in the next 2 or 3 years. So we'll be glad to tag along and do a little bit of filming with you and introduce you to one of the rookie teams so that they can work with you a little bit. Listeners, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Yep. Aaron Potter has been on with us this evening. It's been a very interesting conversation. A little bit of a pause here at the end. Next week's show, we have the youngest paranormal investigator that actually has been out there. His name is Colin Broen. Colin started off as a documentary while he was in high school. It got picked up by Verizon, and he did Teen Spirit. Of course, after that, Colin actually started his own YouTube channel, so make sure that you tune in next week. He's a wonderful kid. You'll get a kick out of him. Again, we've been talking to Aaron Potter with his paranormal investigation team. Make sure that you look him up as well. Aaron, I want to thank you for being on the show. I'm going to go ahead and end it the way I do every single week. As you're learning here in the paranormal, everybody, the paranormal is a very long and extensive learning process. From the beginning to the end, it takes quite a while to learn to be an investigator, and most of the time we do a lot of this on our own. So make sure that you pay attention to that, not only with Generation Truth, because we're going to be covering that, but with everybody involved in the paranormal. I know a lot of people have been in it for quite a number of years. When you're looking at the younger teams, think back to when you started before you actually make somebody feel bad, because I know when I started, I got a lot of laughs. It's been a pleasure having you on here, Aaron. We'll let everybody off to enjoy their weekend. This has been Paranormal Truth and Reality. And remember, in the paranormal, truth should always be that reality. We'll talk to you next week.